Navigating change, one story at a time, we share insights from leaders tackling the challenges of today's digital world. Welcome to Innovation Tales, the podcast exploring the human side of digital transformation.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Innovation Tales. As we all know, a significant number of digital transformation projects end up in failure. Others simply underdeliver, and only a minority are truly successful. If you are a business or digital leader about to embark on an initiative of your own, what do you do to decrease your chances of investing millions into a fiasco? We've discussed in previous episodes that there is a limited number of factors that predict transformation success. Today's guest is Saurav Chakraborty, and together we cover the importance of focusing on the outcomes, executing with speed, and communicating proactively. With over 20 years of experience in technology architecture, Saurav has guided many programs from vision to realization across industries and continents. He's truly passionate about bringing people together from business and technology functions to solve the toughest challenges creatively. His clients and colleagues recognize his expertise in areas such as decision and analytics, process automation, data management, and enterprise integrations. For his part, Saurav describes his leadership philosophy as empowering teams and stakeholders while adopting fail-fast methodologies like design thinking and agile. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Saurav Chakraborty.
Saurav, welcome.
Thank you, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for taking the time. It's always an immense pleasure to have practitioners with such an immense experience and one that's as diverse as yours. For two decades, if I'm not mistaken, I've been working with large enterprises, going through digital transformation, delivering, engaging directly, and also managing delivery teams. But last year, you founded your own company, developing AI applications. So would you say this is like a radical break for you, or it's a natural progression?
I would say it's neither. This is something that I have been meaning to do for a while, but it's really difficult to say this is the right time. You just sometimes need to take the plunge and do it. And that's what I did last year. When I work with different customers, I have seen there are some certain gaps in the market. There are some white spaces. And I thought this is a good opportunity for me to jump in and solve that problem.
Do you mind saying a few words about your vision for the company?
We are out to sort of democratize analytics. And I specifically say analytics and not AI, because when it comes to business decisions, business intelligence, there is an entire spectrum of analytics, starting from pure arithmetic, roll-ups, roll-downs, to statistical, stochastic analysis, to probabilistic and predictions, and then more complex machine learning-based algorithms. The gap that I have noticed in the market, that there are a lot of practitioners, particularly in the corporate finance space, supply chain, internal audit, who has a number of use cases that can benefit from different analytical tools. But what they struggle with is, how do I do this? Number one, the lack of data science skill set, which is fair. You don't expect them to be back to college and do a data science PhD. But also at the same time, they're like, okay, which tools do I need to get? And do I need to get a team? Do I need to get, you know, data out of my ERP? And who's going to help me do that? There are a lot of technical challenges. And our goal is to make that analytics accessible. We focus on exactly the way people work. They work with their Excels. If you have data in your Excel, fantastic. Just load the data. Mm-hmm. And we work with guiding our users. You load the data and system will tell you that, hey, this is what I'm seeing in your data. Does it make sense? Like, is it something that you're interested in? And sort of take you step by step to help you get where you want to be. I'll be frank that in our current version, again, we started only a year ago, it's not completely hands-off. It's not that iPhone that you just unwrap and start using. So we still get involved.
That's the general direction.
That's the general direction that we want to be in a couple of years' time.
And I guess that, for me, does sound like a little bit of a natural progression, because in the digital transformation world, that desire to work together with business people and making the technology easier to use, not hidden behind a number of like large groups of engineers and IT people, had, even if it's not always been possible, but it's been an aspiration for years now.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, this is one of the themes that I have seen throughout my career, that one of the primary criteria for a transformation program to be successful, for a business to be successful, is to focus on the outcome.
Echoes of innovation.
Saurav, in this segment, we use storytelling to bring our audience authentic insights. However, I always have to advise my guests to use discretion with names and specifics, of course, to honor confidentiality agreements and, most importantly, respect the privacy of the individuals involved. So with that in mind, can you think of a story that you can share with us that would illustrate how focusing on the outcomes leads to success?
I'll kind of talk about maybe two stories. And the reason I want to talk about two stories is that we always focus on stories of success. The history is always written from the winner's point of view. Mm-hmm. But it's also important to understand stories of failure, because stories of failure...
Yeah, that's where we learn.
That's where we learn. They're easier to learn from, things not to do, right? So I'm going to talk about two different stories, and these are both two large financial institutes in the world, and anybody would have known them, even if I didn't mention the color or country they are from. And the transformation programs that I'm going to talk about, they're all about compliance and global change. In one particular case, both were driven by regulatory demand, and both the programs I was engaged in a span of about 5 years. First one with one of the organization, and afterward 4 years with the second organization. And the typical tensions in a story, you know, that all exist in both organizations. You know, you have tension around, okay, why are we funding this? What is the outcome we want? And, you know, just like any large program, there are multiple stakeholders and everybody wants something slightly different, right? And then there is always somebody who is trying to corral everybody into outcome that's beneficial for the organization. So in the first instance, a couple of things that made the story work out really well is that there was a very clear sense of outcome, that this is what we want and the things that we do not want.
Anything like lucky like that from day one?
It happened pretty early on during that program. It happened, I would say, within first quarter of that program, because we started to realize that there are too many stakeholders who want different things for their own benefit. And in many cases, their goals were slightly off route from where the program should be, from the initial goal. Of course, you know, managing that, you know, conflict was one of the key aspects. Again, focus on the outcome, focus on the goal. So focus on the goal typically has got a couple of aspects, right? Number one, what is that we are trying to do? And number two is the prioritization, that, you know, what is it we're going to do first? What is it we're going to do next? And also shared understanding that anything that we are saying we're going to do next, you know, it's not about winning or losing. It's making sure that we are actually validating at different steps in the program. Now, just coming back to compare and contrast, the key differences where one organization was successful is that they were able to prioritize. We set a goal early on saying that we need to deliver first phase within X number of months, and we need to start engaging our stakeholders across the world. And because we started doing that, we started to prove value early on and also weed out concepts, design patterns, processes that were not adding value. Because the moment you roll out, you start to get feedback from the actual users. You see what's working, what's not working. Doing that was absolutely a key theme. The second one is that you think of it as a top of the program pyramid, you know, program director and the product owners who are in charge of defining and prioritizing requirements. They were empowered to make a decision that, okay, I can make a decision, I can prioritize, and I know this is what's going in the first chunk of delivery. And, you know, of course, it requires some negotiation. You know, you need to negotiate with your stakeholders, because, you know, I wouldn't be happy if you tell me my requirements will be delivered in the third phase, right? But everyone needs to understand, you know, what is beneficial for the business. But Those are the few key factors that was absolutely, absolutely differentiating compared to the second example where, again, we had a fantastic team. We had a fantastic enterprise architect who knew everything about all the key systems across the organization and the end vision of target state where they wanted to be. And the big difference was that there was always this vision that one fine day we'll turn on the switch and the world will be different. And that never happened.
I guess it was because the organization had not enough appetite, or kind of there was too much risk to do that switch at some point.
It's a combination of all of those, right? So number one, purely from a stakeholder's point of view, they did not see the result in production actually changing the business even after 3 years. So they were ready to pull the plug. They're like, I don't know if it is real. That's number one. Number two, this program, again, ran for close to about 3 years. And you can imagine in 3 years, the technology has evolved. And it was a constant conversation every year that, are we still okay to use the technology from last year or 2 years ago or 3 years ago, or shall we change? And it was always a shifting sand. But it could have been different if we said that, okay, let's put something in production and then see if it works. And then let's figure out whatever comes in the next evolution of technological capabilities, how we're going to use that.
Why was it so much more difficult in that second example to prioritize and focus on the outcomes?
I think there was a sense of fear of missing out, that if I don't get my stuff in first release or second release, I'm not getting it. Let's put everything in one release. There was sense of fear to have a difficult conversation that, hey, why something needs to go before something else. Ideally, it should be driven by business prioritization. But when you get emotional that, hey, my requirements are equally important, right? Then it becomes a question of, let's do one and figure out if it actually works or not. But people were afraid to have those difficult conversations.
It's not easy.
It's not easy. And I think, as I said, you know, those three principles always come back. Are you purely focused on the outcome instead of being pedantic about your technology? Number two, speed. And when I say speed, you know, it's always prove along the way. You know, don't wait until in end of 3 years. And I'm not just talking about technology landscape. It's also the business.
And you are.
Right. And the number three is communication. Communication. And it's always the key. Make sure that bad news travels faster than good news.
Great. Thank you very much. And before we move on to the next segment, if you found this story valuable, please like and subscribe to help us reach a wider audience.
Blueprints of Innovation.
So Saurav, in this shorter segment, usually we focus on the tools, methods, or other concepts that we might have mentioned previously.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you've been giving us really good examples of organizations either managing to focus on the outcomes or failing to focus on the outcomes. Would you mind defining that term for us?
If you are spending money on something, you're trying to achieve something. What is that you are trying to achieve? Is it better experience for the customers? Is it cost saving from your operations? Is it making your processes more efficient? Is it bringing more automation?
No.
And some of those may not be the end goal by themselves.
Mm.
And again, I give a few examples and you can pick which one is not. Bringing automation, right? Why are you bringing automation? What is the outcome that you're trying to achieve, right? I'll give you a simple example. This is something I have been working with one of the clients fairly recently, and they have this concept of four eyes check. Somebody fills up a form, somebody else looks at it. And I can talk about, you know, 10 different digital tools that can make the process digital and faster and more controlled. But it's not going to benefit the business in long term. As a business owner, you need to ask the question, why? Again, or from four eyes check to I want to go to two eyes check, but why? End goal, end of the day, is to reduce risk. You want to reduce risk at a lower cost. Now, what is the best way of doing that? Which technology can you use? And of course, for some of those conversations, you may not have a clear idea of what is technologically possible, what is the kind of limit of the available technologies, right? And that's where you may get hire consultants from outside to tell you what are the arts of possible. But focusing on the outcome is key, because many times you end up digitizing the same process that you had for the last 10 years and it benefits nobody. You spend a few million dollars, it benefits nobody.
Another term you've mentioned and that I guess is related is the role of a product manager. Is it fair to say that a good team of product managers are there to ensure that you're focused on the outcome?
It is, but it's also one of the least understood terms in the entire, all the work that we do for different clients. I personally think that calling a role product manager, particularly when you are not developing a product, is very misleading. I think it should be called a business czar with a degree in prioritization. Somebody who needs to understand how business works, somebody who needs to have a clear sense of what is possible and how fast something is possible, something with a good sense of prioritization. And again, this is another skill set that we typically overlook, somebody with a really good negotiation skill. Because product owners, I have seen, they understand everything. They understand the prioritization technology. They're like, hey, this is what we're going to do, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And when they give the message back to their business stakeholders, everything changes because they cannot negotiate. For me, 4 things. Do you understand the business? Do you understand what outcome you are trying to achieve? Do you understand from a technology point of view what is possible and how fast something is possible at what cost? 3, can you prioritize based on the first two? And 4, can you actually sell your priority in a list of priorities back to your stakeholders?
Innovator's Playbook.
So, Sourav, in this third and last segment, we aim to provide practical advice to our audience. And of course, you've given us great stories about the importance of focusing on the outcomes, executing with speed and communication. Let's try and unpack this for our target audience. Let's say from the perspective of a business leader, what kind of strategies should they be looking at to ensure that they're focusing on the outcomes?
I think the primary strategy needs to be always asking 5 whys. Why am I doing this? Because first why could be for yourself. Second why will be for boss. Third why will be for your boss's boss. And the last one could be for the market if you're a listed company. One of the things that I do advise my clients, and I'm talking about my clients right now, that any business case that we put together, it always needs to address where the business wants to go. Whatever I'm doing, is it going to help with the top line? How it is going to help with the top line? Or is it going to help with the bottom line? How is it going to help with the bottom line? End of the day, is it going to help the share price? Is it going to help the employees? Is it going to help the other stakeholders, customers, suppliers? And those questions are always key. I think many times we get into the nitty-gritties of doing technology stuff, which I absolutely love, but I always ask myself that question, that why am I doing this? And I think it is very, very important. In end of the day, I'll give you a simple example, optimizing your inventory. Very practical example, one of my clients, and why are we doing this? We are doing this so that we can reduce the inventory carry. Okay, why? It is going to help us reduce the working capital commitments. Why? Oh, then if you add the cost of capital, it is going to help you reduce the capital. How does it help? Helps with the bottom line. Okay, what? Helps with the share price. You need to ask yourself those questions. So that, you know, you take the focus away from what is that technically I'm doing, more on why I'm doing that. And when you focus on why, the technology becomes a sideshow. It becomes, for me, then the question becomes, what tools can I bring in to solve this problem? Whether that's, you know, simple analytical tools or work with a professor at a university on supply chain to design a new algorithm, doesn't matter. And we bring in those to help with the outcome.
And, you know, when you were defining what a product manager does, there's a number of skills you've mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking it's not that business leaders don't want to focus on the outcomes. It just is sometimes very difficult to have the ability to understand the art of the possible, to understand what the business does in the, you know, by the same person, to know how long something's going to take, to be able to sell it. So do you always recommend that organizations acquire those skills internally to, you know, start having their product owners or product managers? Or is that something that can be relied upon with an external partner?
I think it's the answer is like 2.5. The answer is not one or two. And I'll tell you the reason for that. I mean, I think acquiring skills, for it's not a realistic recommendation for most organizations. Mm-hmm. Unless you are big with deep pockets, hiring the right skills may not be the answer all the time. I think the alternate answer is, in, of course, hiring people that you trust, right? If you don't know that person or if you don't know that organization, ask them to prove something small to validate, mm-hmm. right? But there's another aspect, right? So although even if you cannot hire, I think the organizations need to think of how do you take the red tips off from innovation. Depending on your workforce, most people are very inquisitive. Mm. And that makes us humans different from AIs, our curiosity, our inquisitiveness. And if you let people use technology, if you let people experiment with technology and see what outcome they get, I think that will bring the innovation in-house. Most organizations I have seen, that it's not that they don't have the right people or the right mindset. They have the wrong red tips. And because they have the wrong red tips, and they stop innovating themselves until somebody from outside comes in and shows them that, hey, this is what you could have done. And that becomes a wow moment, right? So again, as I said, you know, the answer is a combination of one and two. One, you cannot hire, but you can always let the red tape go and let people innovate, let people experiment, but also bring in external consultants, because they will always tell you that what else is going on in the market.
And as we're approaching the end of the interview, are there any final messages you'd like to leave our audience with?
I think the name of this podcast is Innovation Tales, right? I think there is a specific type of mindset that you need for innovation. And that mindset starts with curiosity,
mm-hmm.
and less of affination to how things have been. Because how things have been was only defined by the limit of imagination of people who held your role before you.
Indeed.
So it's always a matter of curiosity. How do you use all the tools that you have available, you know, whether that's manpower, technology, budget to spend, whatever it is, to achieve the outcome.
Perfect.
And that's practical innovation.
Very good point to finish on. Saurav, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Alex. Thanks for having me.
And that brings us to the end of this episode. Today's conversation highlighted once again that the hardest challenges we face when working on digital transformation initiatives are rarely technical. And the two examples shared by Saurav today illustrate perfectly three of the human factors involved. If you're watching this on YouTube, don't forget to like and subscribe. Or you can rate and review the show in your favorite podcasting app. We look forward to your feedback. In the meantime, we've got more episodes lined up, so stay tuned for more tales of innovation that inspire, challenge, and transform. Until next time, peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Innovation Tales.